Hey everyone, it's Noor, here with another episode of AdTech Unfiltered. It's been over a year since many ad tech companies pledged to change their hiring and cultural practices to better foster diverse and inclusive workplaces. Now, over 14 months later, it's more than time to check in on that progress. While some change has been made, ad tech, amongst other industry sectors, has struggled to reach hiring goals that were set back in 2020. And to add to the challenge, 2021 has shaped up to become a working professionals renaissance, one in which in-demand talent is either thinking about leaving their job or actively planning on doing so. Accordingly, employers are not only concerned about getting diverse and coveted talent in the door, they need to actively plan on how to keep them. Questions and conversation on what to do to change the demographic landscape of the industry have been mounting for years. Someone very familiar with the many moving pieces that the ad tech hiring world is seeking to reconcile is Corinne Canty. She's a longtime ad tech C-suite executive and the COO of We Are Rosie, a late-breaking and notable talent solution organization focused on hiring and helping meet the needs of today's diverse array of marketing talent and the employers that are seeking them out. Corinne shares perspective on where the industry stands today, where it's fallen short, how managers and executives can be expected to play a bigger role in creative, inclusive environments, and more. This episode with Corinne Canty on the future of diverse hiring in ad tech starts right now. I'll just start off by asking, or rather mentioning, the fact that we're past the midpoint of the year. How have things been going for you? How has your life changed across this course of the pandemic and moving into the reopening of the world for you, Corinne?
Yeah, you know, I feel like, you know, in the spring of this year, everyone kind of hit the wall, no matter what changes have happened since the pandemic. Everyone has kind of had something that's changed in their life. And I've always worked from home for the last 6 or 7 years, but I realized that the connection of leaving the house and being with people and socializing and, you know, the times when our company did get together to meet in person, it really made a difference. And I don't think you recognized the difference of just being social.
I feel similarly, even though I haven't been working from home for 6 or 7 years, I've been working in an office pretty much my whole career. And then this past 16, 17 months showed up. And I think I took it in stride for the most part. But most recently, like in the last several weeks, it's kind of been wearing me down, because I think I feel like we see this light at the end of the tunnel as people start getting back into offices. And I think I want to be a part of that now that, you know, you can start socializing again to a larger extent. So I'm ready to get back out into the world. And I imagine even for you, a person who's worked from home for so long, you're hungry for some social interaction as well.
Yes, definitely. I improvise when I'm not working. So spending time with audiences and being out and interacting and just, you know, meeting different types of people, that's what I miss the most.
So I know you've also made a shift across the course of the pandemic career-wise. You've had a long tenure in the ad tech space as a C-level executive, but more recently you've made a switch over to We Are Rosie. Can you give me a little bit of a background on what you are doing at that organization?
Yes, definitely. So yes, I'm currently the COO at We Are Rosie, which is a marketing talent place. It's really interesting because most of my career has been in advertising, but early on I started out and was in recruitment advertising for a long time, and taking kind of the recruitment advertising aspect of marketing, then moving on to doing e-commerce and then digital ad tech advertising for the last 7 years. What we do is really provide a home for marketers and marketers who want to work differently. People who are looking for ways to freelance and consult and lean into what lights them up as they work, and pairing them with companies that are really looking for diverse talent and for these marketing experts who want to work in a different way. And companies are starting to realize that, you know, the future of work isn't one way. It's definitely a hybrid model. And there's several different ways that the talent would like to work, and there's several different ways that you can get work done.
Yeah, and so even what you just shared there as far as looking for diverse talent, I think there are a couple of lenses through which people interpret what diverse hiring actually is. but that there are so many additional facets that people haven't taken into consideration. And some of them you even might have been hinting at as far as how do we accommodate quality workers? How do we make sure work is accessible to them? And that previously, maybe we weren't so thoughtful about them. And now in the last several months, maybe the past year, there's been more thoughtfulness around that. How does that work as far as your team and your like the leadership team at We Are Rosie getting potential organizations that are looking to do that more diverse hiring, getting them into the mindset where they're more adaptable and considering that diverse hiring pool, maybe in ways that they historically haven't?
The one thing that the pandemic has done has kind of wiped away the myth of remote work not working. A lot of companies were afraid before, and several were dipping their toe in, or there were models where, you know, there were some options to work remotely, but many had a fear that it just wouldn't work. And suddenly a lot of these companies were struggling to figure out remote work and figuring out how to get the right talent in with all these changes happening in the world. And one of the things I think people don't associate a lot with diversity is location bias. And that's something that's hindered the workplace for a very long time. There's a lot of big brands who may have wanted to have a more diverse workforce, but due to even where they're headquartered or where they're located, that community may not be as attractive or as welcoming to different types of people, and therefore cutting off the opportunity for both the employee and for the company to have that experience and to find the best fit to match people with what really lights them up, to allow them to do their best work, and for the company to be their most productive and have the best outcomes.
What do you think the underlying fear is there, Corinne? What is it that organizations have had this longstanding hesitation towards as far as not hiring people who aren't locally accessible to them?
I think some of it is just the history of the Industrial Revolution and kind of how business has evolved, especially here in the United States. And, you know, it's kind of, there is a way to do work and everyone didn't stretch too far from that mold, though work and life has changed significantly from when those kind of processes were in place or those idealisms were in place. And there's always a fear of, are people going to do the work? Are they going to get it done? Does this make sense? I want to be able to see. It's kind of the old manager profile versus what it means to, you know, be a human-centric leader and recognize that, you know, as humans, we want to do a good job. We want to do work that lights us up. We want to be productive. And being able to pair that with opportunities that match is really just a win-win situation.
I think another thing that's been very interesting about the pandemic and also organizations like We Are Rosie and just anyone out there from an organizational perspective that's now considering more remote hiring circumstances is that we are living in 2021 and we have all the resources that are necessary for people to work remotely. Whereas 10 years ago, I think we could still do it, but not as successfully as we can today. So yes. I wonder if this has really enabled or empowered a lot of organizations to, they had to test because of what happened with the pandemic. And now maybe they feel more comfortable with it.
Yes, that's definitely a good point. And when I started working remotely, and watching how it's evolved over, you know, the past 7 years since I've been fully remote, there's many tools that have popped up. Technology has really made it easier to connect. Everyone kind of uses Zoom as a verb now. And so being able to still see each other face to face and be able to read some of that nonverbal communication. And the one thing that I think a lot of people don't recognize that I've learned over the years is that we really want people to bring their whole selves to work. And that's been a part of the conversation for a while and people who are leaning into more human-centric work. But you kind of get conditioned to kind of put your work face on or put your mask on when you go into the office. And sometimes it's not even as conscious that you're doing it. But when you're working remotely or you're working from home or you're working from whatever environment you work best in, lots of times it's way easier to be yourself in that environment. It's way easier to do your best work and to show up as your whole self. And you get to see a little sneak peeks into people's lives that you probably didn't when you were in the office, which I think builds stronger connections and stronger relationships. And since as adults, we spend a lot of our time with our coworkers, building those stronger relationships makes work better.
Absolutely. And it's something that I know you and I have discussed previously about the optics of seeing who hangs out with who in an office space and how that kind of bounces off and makes other people feel in the workplace. Maybe it can create a sense of isolation, or it makes you wonder where you stand in association with that. So maybe there's something really nice about being in a place which is so comfortable to you because it's your own home. And when you are working with people, the focus isn't on how you're reading into other social situations, but you're focused on actually doing the work that you enjoy doing.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that happens in remote environments is you have to be more intentional about your communication. So many times, like you said, you may be walking down the hall and it's happenstance that you enter into a conversation, or you may see the group and not necessarily know how to approach the group. But there's several tools that you can use and be way more intentional when people are distributed in helping people to connect and learn different things. When you live in a different part of the country, or you have different environments outside of your home, you bring more to the table when you're looking at thought leadership.
What might some of those things be? Because I think a lot of folks, they just think of Zoom primarily and setting up meetings. I know something that's built into Microsoft Teams, which is what I use at my workplace. We have a default setup for this thing called Icebreaker, where it just shoots you the name of somebody that works in your office. It's shuffled and they just send it to you and they say, set up a meeting with this person and take the opportunity for a quick chat. But that's really kind of the extent that I'm knowledgeable about. Are there other things that you've seen or heard of people are using in professional environments to connect more deeply?
Yeah, I definitely know about the different options in Teams and most of the kind of online platforms that are popping up that are enabling people to work better together online have some of those options. But there's also a lot of really cool companies out there that are creating unique kind of immersive experiences online, and where sometimes it may be a chat or a pop or connecting people. There are some companies out there where you can kind of build your own avatar and walk into different rooms and kind of still have that feeling of walking around the office and bumping into people. But a lot of it is just kind of intentionally making sure that when you're getting on group calls, you can even old-fashioned set up an icebreaker question. How do you get to learn a little bit more about each other than always just being business, which can sometimes happen if it's just remote work. Sometimes you lean a little bit more on just the business side. So it's really important for leaders to be intentional about creating environments that foster not only engagement, but inclusivity.
So that's something I wanted to dive in more deeply with you on, Corinne, is that this buzzword that's out there, intentionality, doing things with intention. And I think some organizations out there and some leadership teams are doing a good job of embracing that and figuring out how intentionality should manifest in their organization so they can make inclusivity happen, or they can make belonging happen in a workplace remotely or in person. And that other people are using the word, but not actually conceiving ideas that are going to help them successfully make those things happen. So I'm curious, from your perspective, as this being a topic that I'm sure is coming up pretty regularly, where are organizations and leaders missing the mark as far as actually being intentional for creating inclusive spaces?
The key, especially at this point, is going beyond the plan or the intention. It's more along the lines of how are you really taking action? Like, are you truly authentically walking the walk? Because there's been a lot of good intentions over the last year with everything that has happened. There's been a lot of people looking at their strategies, looking at their policies and their programs and talking about it and putting a strategy on paper, but like taking that next step and truly living it and getting the feedback from your employees and from the people who are in your organization, that's where you're going to get the best information, is asking the question and then making it okay for people to speak up, giving people different ways to speak up that they may be comfortable with, because not everyone feels comfortable speaking up or contributing in the same way. So thinking about that, everyone learns differently, everyone has a different communication style, and creating different tools so you can get that feedback.
Yeah. Sourcing feedback is critical. I think sometimes organizations struggle with what to do with that feedback in terms of converting sometimes something that feels like a what, like what we should be doing, and turning it into how we should actually be making that change happen. I think people are in differing stages right now. And by people, I mean companies and the leaders that run them. But I also wanted to dive more deeply into this very large concept of DEI, and maybe it should be expanded to DEIB, standing for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. What do you think are some of the most common challenges that brands, agencies, and businesses are facing when it comes to making diverse hiring actually happen?
I think a lot of people kind of start with looking at their diversity numbers and putting policies in place and trying to have better recruiting practices, but not understanding what happens when you get all the way to belonging. And as you're recruiting people, are you really establishing an environment that when they come there, they will actually feel like they belong? Not that you're just creating ways to include people, but they actually can feel like they are a part of the organization, that they have found people there that they can connect with, and that they truly belong and are valued. And I think that that is where a lot of companies struggle and understanding how to kind of get to that point. And a lot of it is really just the lack of asking, the lack of really digging into your current employees and understanding, like, what are our gaps? Where are we falling short? What else could we do? Asking them to think about how to make the company better for everyone usually can contribute to even better recruiting and hiring practices so that you have a more robust workforce.
I almost think that this scenario where we're focusing on diverse hiring, creating those metrics, and then having higher level leadership just continuously ask for, when are we going to hit these benchmarks that we've set for ourselves and are discussing widely? Let's just make sure these happen. It kind of feels like when, let's say, an organization or a brand says, you know what we want, agency? We want a viral video. Now, what are the components of what makes a video viral? We don't know about that. We just want the thing. Give us the result, but we don't want to do the deeper digging into how the result should actually be achieved. What do you think are some of those steps? I know you mentioned like the big one, which is talking to your employees. But then I think another thing we've been noticing in this landscape, Corinne, is that there are definitely employees that have diverse experiences who have said over the past year that they are exhausted from the idea of having ideas sourced from them. They want the work to not be sourced from themselves. They want organizations to take on that actual accountability. So maybe there is, to an extent, information that can be pulled from employees if they're open to talking about it. But what do you do when you need to go past what your employees are open to sharing?
No, 100%. And definitely being a woman of color, I definitely understand the exhaustion of sometimes feeling like you are that go-to source, especially if you're at an organization that's just on the beginning of their journey and there's few people who look like you there and you are the only one to kind of go to. I think once you've had that conversation, it's like, what do you really do with that information? And you can go beyond your employees, that's a good place to start because you really want to have an understanding. But also, there are a lot of companies out there who are doing good work. And are you benchmarking as leaders? Are you making connections with other leaders and looking to solve the problem together? Are you finding ways to bring together people in your industry? I mean, being a woman who's been in advertising and even heavy on the ad tech for a long time, we got work to do. And a lot of it is starting to bring industry leaders together beyond just what's happening in our organization, but recognizing gaps in larger industries. And how do we even start at the industry level to make it better for everyone?
Something that many people have noted in the larger ad tech and martech communities, people of diverse identities, we're not always seeing them rising all the way to the top. Is it that they're not being hired all the way to the C-suite? Is it that not enough of them are being elevated to that? Is it that they're leaving the industry before making their way up to the top of the chain? What have you noted as it relates to what some of the issues are? Obviously, people talk about the glass ceilings that exist out there that are very real. Curious for your thoughts, Corinne, as far as why we're not seeing enough of that diverse hiring moving all the way up to the C-suite.
What's kind of core to the problem is a lot of people of color do not have the same level of allies, advocates, and mentorships that counterparts may have. And I think that that's something that a lot of companies, as they're working on their programs, fail to realize because it's also something that's hard to just do. People have to really recognize and understand your own personal bias because we all have it. We've all been raised in different environments and we've picked up on different biases, whether they're conscious or unconscious. And it's like, how do we first take a look at ourselves and recognize, are there behaviors where we may be perpetuating this? Am I only reaching out to and supporting and helping people who look like me, regardless of what that is? Am I really trying to ensure that as I'm building this team, there's diverse thought leadership across the team? And that could mean many different things. Lots of times we go straight to race, but there's so many different dimensions of diversity. And lots of times people leave out things like ageism. And it's really just, how do we make sure that we are creating these environments where we get the best of everyone's thought leadership and experience to make the workplace and the world a little bit better?
And ageism is another great one. And I think that's something that's set to become a big issue in this industry, because it is an industry that is so perpetually consumed with youth. And I think that's a larger tech issue, not just an ad tech issue. As far as actually combating some of those problems, now we're basically 1 year plus out from when a lot of organizations made commitments to say, we're going to make sure that that diverse hiring happens. And we're going to make some formal promises to put people on our executive boards, to put those diverse leaders on our C-suite teams. How have you seen that manifest itself now in 2021 by comparison to when those promises were being made back in 2020?
I really feel like we haven't seen as much progress as sometimes we think. We did see what many people have referred to as a brown wave of people really announcing appointments in different roles, many of which were diversity roles, which I think is great. But knowing a lot of people in the industry and many who were appointed to those roles 6 months, 9 months in, feeling like I don't actually really have a say here. I don't really have a seat at the table. And some of them feeling more like a headpiece, so to speak, instead of truly, truly being hired so that they can make an impact and a difference and hold the same weight as everyone else at the table. And I think that's where we fall short, is that that still happens. And when we say that we need people in C-suite, it's across all functions of C-suite. And we need people across all aspects of leadership and sitting at the table as we're making these decisions, because working together is what builds the system that everyone's coming up in.
Something I've been noting that the larger industry has been leaning into and working on cultivating is creating spaces where people who are at the entry level or at the mid level are getting some of those differing resources that you mentioned a little bit earlier on in our conversation, as far as getting that mentorship, finding those sources for how they can elevate themselves, make the right career move at the right point in time, through mentorship programs, through finding resources and new skills that they should adopt so that they're ahead of the trajectory of where they want to be in the next 2, 5, 10 years. But I bring that up to say, I sense that just in the short term, we're not going to immediately see the change that we're looking for, and that we just need to be closely monitoring this. And I'm anticipating a bigger wave of change in the next, let's say, 5 years, like five to, I'd say, frankly, up to 10 years. That's when we're going to hopefully, and it's my expectation, I imagine I'll still be in this industry, that it's at those inflection points that we're actually going to see the shift, because there's a lot of diverse talent at the mid-level. It's going to have to be those folks, at least many of those folks, who are elevated up into executive level roles over this next decade or half decade for us to actually see the change. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you that there's a lot of effort being put into people at the beginning of their careers. And one of the things that we lean into a lot at We Are Rosie is understanding that people have seasons in their careers. And I don't think this is something that's been embraced enough across the workforce, and especially in our industry. And I think that's partially also what leads to the ageism problem, is as we go through our life, we all have seasons. We have seasons of growth. We have seasons of where we are as adults, whether we raise families or not, what we want out of life, our wisdom, all of the things that we go through as we go through life. And our careers have seasons too, but we tend to think that it's very linear. We tend to have, you know, the map that was placed in our head very young, like there's a ladder and you take one step at a time and this is how you climb it. But the reality is people have seasons, and it's not just vertical. It's vertical, horizontal, it's sideways. It can go many different ways because that's how our lives go. And when we start really looking at what it's like to be a human and have a career and live life, a lot of people talk about, you know, work-life balance or work-life integration. Like, really, we're all just living life. And so how do we recognize that the seasons of our life translate to the seasons of our careers, and start thinking about that as we are looking at how do we get more diverse people in leadership spots?
I think what you just said goes back to the intentionality piece. That might be something that a lot of organizations have not reflected on, thinking about the fact that there are seasons associated with people's careers and how they may want to lean into that as they're looking to find those diverse and attractive hires that they're looking to bring into their organization. playing off of what you just said there, there are some things that people want when they're attractive talent and they're diverse talent, and they might include, well, they definitely include pay expectations. So that's one thing. And then another thing that you brought up earlier was flexibility around where you work. But what are other priorities that you've noted now being in a talent-focused role again that a lot of top talent in the ad tech, MarTech, the larger advertising space, that are priorities for those types of workers?
I think one of the central things is people want to do work that aligns with their why, and they want something that feels purposeful, and they want something that lights them up. I think a lot of people are shifting away from the old school notion that you just go to work for a paycheck and then you live life outside of work, especially as we see even the younger people coming up. The fact that COVID made us all pause and reflect on life in some way, shape, or form is making people think about how do they want to live their lives a little bit differently. That is a big part of it is, yes, people want pay equity. Yes, people want to be able to have benefits and all the things that come along with being able to survive in our society. But also they want to go to work and enjoy it and feel good and be able to work on different things. And they want to be able to learn and grow and have opportunities to maybe learn a new skill or follow the joy in their work. And I think that that's something that we don't necessarily think enough about.
It's impossible for me to not consistently bring it back to organizations needing to really think through what that would mean and how that should manifest itself. How do you win somebody over when it's supposed to go beyond the scope of what their pay is and what the benefits package is? Because that so often constitutes what it is that you're bringing to the table, along with some light mention of the mission of your organization. But I think there's only so much you know before you actually get hired on to see the actual work climate that you're going to be working in. Do you think organizations are taking the extra step to bring clarity to what you just described now, Corinne, as far as, hey, I want to come to work, but I want to feel good about the work that I'm doing. And that requires painting a clearer picture of why there's value in the work you're doing. Does that go beyond, I don't know, let's say the CEO sharing like a quick teaser video on what the purpose of an organization is and some bullets on a website? How else should that be showing up so that top talent is attracted to an organization and their mission?
Yeah, I think there's definitely companies out there that are leaning in and doing a good job. But I also think that there are a lot of companies who the leadership team themselves, if you asked every single person on the leadership team the why, it'd be different. And so are companies spending enough time really understanding their why, number one, to be able to articulate it so that people can understand it? Are they also recognizing that all of their employees will have their own individual whys that may or may not perfectly align with the company's why, but they may find their why within the type of work that they do there? And I think that this is where employers need to realize, like, culture isn't something that you just can put in a booklet and pass out and say, here's our culture. Like, culture is built by the norms, the practices, the people, what you allow, the behaviors in your organization. And how much are you fostering things that lead towards belonging? How much are you fostering ways for people to connect? How much are you fostering programs and internal innovation that really are just about making the culture better and making work better when people come to work and allowing your employees to drive that? Because when you give people the space to think about it, then they'll give you really great ideas. But lots of times we don't create that space.
What I've seen most commonly is that a lot of the responsibility is shouldered by people who are in managerial roles. So I'm going to say mid-level management, you're actually boots on the ground, working with teams, you're getting that feedback from your team as far as what's working for your employees, what isn't working from them. And but you're also just you're just an employee as well. And sometimes I don't know how well that ladders up to executive teams. I preface that to ask you this question. What are the actual tangible responsibilities of executive level leadership? What should that work look like for them?
I think where sometimes executives fall short, and not even intentionally, is that they don't recognize how far removed the executive team can be from the day-to-day work. And so there may be good intentions, and they may say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and pass it down, and then never say anything else about it. But are they really putting together a strategic plan to ensure that we are meeting those goals that we're reaching? Are they themselves taking time to get feedback across all levels so they have a firsthand of account of what's happening throughout the org? Do you have your pulse on it? Or are you relying on just pushing one-way messages and focusing on the vision, but not understanding, are you bringing the people along, or are people clear or aligned or even understand or on the same page, or do people feel disconnected from what it is that's happening? And I think that's the biggest thing, is that executives need to really kind of understand, like, do you understand the pulse of the day-to-day? And are you thinking about that and taking that into consideration as you're working on the vision, as you're looking at the zoomed out long-term strategy? Are you paying attention to what's happening as we go?
Something that I have personally seen and been really appreciative for being able to see is that there are definitely executive leaders, C-suite executives out there who are doing more than passing along a message. They are becoming a part of the process by doing exercises with their immediate, let's say their direct reports who are at higher levels of management in their organization by, I don't know, having monthly discussions focused on making diversity a priority or making inclusion a priority. And then encouraging those leaders to go to the people that work for them and have a similar exercise and have that trickle all the way down through the organization so that it's affecting many more people. But I was really, I would say personally, uplifted to hear about those types of exercises taking place all the way from the very top, because you prioritize what your leadership prioritizes.
Yes.
I'm just hoping that there's more of that happening out there.
No, definitely. Those are the types of things that really give me hope. I've been seeing a lot more of that as well. And people really taking to heart as they build out employee resource groups, taking those ideas and actually taking the actions up at the top as well. So I agree with you. If you speak it, but you don't live it, then it doesn't seem as important.
There are professionals with marginalized identities that are out in the world plentifully right now. And I think for those who have noted the maybe lack of change that's happened since a year ago, it isn't happening as fast as we expected. And I know that's something that you mentioned earlier as well. How do you encourage that talent to still feel optimistic about dedicating their careers to this industry and to their workplaces? Because I think a lot of people out there are feeling a little burnt out by not seeing the change that they had seen pledged, let's say, a year plus ago. What's out there to be optimistic about?
I think for employees, the thing to be most optimistic about is there's definitely a shift in terms of, for a very long time, it was about the organizations. And now it's really about the talent. And talent has the power in this marketplace. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. I see it getting, you know, progressively more. And so it's really on the organizations to start to recognize that if they want to continue to attract and retain top talent, talent no longer feels obligated to stay in a system that no longer serves them. And so people are recognizing there's different ways to work. That's why we see all of these businesses popping up during COVID, where so many people were afraid to leave their full-time jobs and they were only doing the work that lights them up on the side. And they recognized, no, this is not how I want to live my life. And so now they have the skills that these organizations need, but they're able to craft their days and do the work in the way that they want because their skills are in high demand. And I see that especially in our industry right now. And it's something organizations really need to pay attention to, and otherwise they're going to lose out on some really great talent. We've been seeing a lot of companies struggle to hire and a lot of people leaving big companies because they just feel like they don't have to take it anymore.
Yeah, I've been seeing it all over the place. I have never seen so many folks so quickly make shifts across the industry and be able to source them so quickly. I think there's no way around it. People are observing what's happening in the industry and it obligates organizations to make a change. One final question from my end. What's something, as you've made this shift to a new organization that's focused specifically on the hiring of diverse talent, what's something new that you've learned? What's kind of changed your lens of perspective as you focused on diverse hiring?
Just being more optimistic, because we do talk to organizations who are looking to make change and they just don't know how. And so being able to help organizations understand that you have to look at work differently. Like, the start, it's not just about how your organization works, but you have to look at work differently as a whole and kind of throw out some of the old school ways that we kind of boxed ourselves in. And what makes me feel good is that there's companies that are trying. And for some of these companies, these are really big ships to turn. And so that's why I think we're seeing it take longer than we would like. But I do see effort, and I think that gives me hope. And even more so, it's watching people be empowered to live their lives in the best ways that they want and not being afraid to make decisions that are going to make their lives better in the way that they live. And I think for so long, we all kind of had this fear of security and stability and not making changes in our roles, even if we were at a company or organization or a season in our career that it no longer served us, because we were afraid of like, what's next? What if there's not something out there for me? And people are recognizing that they can make their own way. And with the high level of uncertainty that the pandemic gave us, I think it kind of took away some of that fear from the uncertainty that might not seem as scary as some of the things that we faced over the last year.
I really appreciate the perspective, Corinne, and a lot of things to think about, like not just to think about, but for organizations to really reflect on deeply and come up with new solutions to deal with the fact that there is a lot of incredible talent out there. There is new talent that is going to be moving their way up, become increasingly attractive as each day goes by, and that it's organizations like yours, amongst many of the other advertising and marketing players out there, that need to focus so deeply on sourcing talent, finding talent, attracting talent. So I appreciate all your perspective today.
I appreciate you having me.
Thanks again to Corinne Canty, Chief Operating Officer at We Are Rosie, for the conversation on facing the challenges of diverse hiring in ad tech, inclusivity in the workplace, fostering spaces of true belonging, and more. Many things for leaders to think about for an industry still early in its journey to make necessary change happen. That's it for this episode. I'm your host, Noor Nasir, back soon with more AdTech Unfiltered.